Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor LeCain. The country is being roiled by Trump's nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court. Last week, the nation was riveted by the testimony of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford at the nomination hearing as she told her story of being sexually assaulted by Kavanaugh. Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona was concerned enough about the charges that he demanded an FBI investigation into the assault, or he would vote no on the nomination. Republicans reluctantly agreed to the FBI investigation, but then put strict limits on it, leading some people to think the report would be a whitewash. Scores of potential interviewees were not contacted by the FBI, and in fact rebuffed by the FBI when they offered to share what they know. Today, the Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced he's calling a vote on the nomination tomorrow. This experience has caused an uproar for many reasons. First, the Republicans are hiding thousands of documents from Kavanaugh's time working in the Bush White House, leading to suspicions of what they're hiding. Second, Kavanaugh's aggressive remarks at his hearing last week led many to believe he lacks the impartiality and judicial temperament to be on the Supreme Court. And also, Republicans trying to ram the nomination through the Senate have made the whole nomination process very rushed and incomplete. And finally, the sharing of Dr. Blasey Ford's story has opened up an outpouring from women who have also experienced sexual assault. Concerned women and men have been organizing daily protests of the Kavanaugh nomination, with highly spirited protests at the Senate, at the Supreme Court, and elsewhere. Our two guests today are two women from Arizona who came to Washington, D.C. to oppose the Kavanaugh nomination. Alejandra Gomez is co-executive director for the Arizona Center for Empowerment, dedicated to social justice and community empowerment through grassroots mobilization. Representative Azela Blanc is the first formerly undocumented woman to be elected to the Arizona State Legislature, elected at the same time Maricopa County's notorious anti-immigrant Sheriff Joe Arpaio was finally defeated. Representative Blanc and Alejandra Gomez, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, well, this is quite a time, and I know the two of you have been right in the thick of things, and I'd like to hear from each of you. Why did you come to Washington, D.C. to protest Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court? Representative Blanc, let's begin with you. Why did you come to D.C. on this issue?
So when I was asked by Alex's organization, Lucha, to join them, it took me a minute to think about it. And as I thought about it, I thought about it on a couple levels. Number one, the opportunity to be present during this very historic event was going to be, for me, a powerful moment personally, and also to experience what oftentimes we see on TV but never can capture the essence of what's actually going on. And number two, which is the most important, you know, when I think of our future here, when I think of my daughter, when I think of even my son and how we're moving forward, I thought it was really important to elevate the voices of the people I represent and to be present and to try to do my very best to represent my constituents in a matter that will have severe impacts on all of us, regardless of our political affiliations. This will have long-term consequences to all of us here.
Exactly right. Well put. And Alejandra, why did you come to D.C. to protest the Kavanaugh nomination?
Yeah, so for us as an organization, ACE is our C3 sister organization to Lucha. And so we had been organizing conversations with women as of last year. And intergenerationally, young women and older women were really talking about like sexual assault as a common thing that was happening in their lives. And so as I was watching Dr. Blasey Ford give her testimony, I was in tears. I was in tears because I was thinking of our members. I was thinking about all of the women through all of our conversations and listening sessions that were going to be so affected by what was happening and this major governmental overreach. And so for me, I personally felt called as a person that has, as of this experience, as of going to D.C., realized that I was too a victim of assault, but from all of our member stories, and Dr. Ford really felt that because Flake was such a critical piece of this vote, that Arizona needed to go directly to D.C. and represent and be the voice of all of the women that have been affected and assaulted and are surviving now, but that our government shouldn't be putting our women through this again, because it happened under Trump and it's happening again.
Right. And when you mentioned Flake, you're referring to, of course, Senator Jeff Flake as the senator from Arizona, and the two of you live in Arizona, so you're constituents. And an elected official will definitely listen more carefully to someone who's a constituent than someone from another state. So it's really great that the two of you went. I want to thank you for showing up at this important time. And I understand that both of you actually did go to Senator Flake's office and actually spoke with his chief of staff. And I'd love to hear, you know, who was with you at that meeting and what was that conversation like? Representative Blanc, we'll start with you.
So I have to say, prior to us engaging with the chief of staff, it was myself, Alex and Rosie and Patti who were with us, and we were there just to try and meet with our senator. And I have to tell you, it was a really humbling moment for me to be in this space talking to young 20-something office staff. And in that moment when I was engaging with them, they were incredibly dismissive, almost as if I didn't exist as a simply human being.
You're kidding me. This is from Senator Flake's staff, and you're an elected state representative in Arizona?
Mm-hmm. Well, in that moment, I had not identified myself as such.
I see. Okay.
But when I did, I was still received in a manner that was slightly shocking to me, where I had to highlight that I actually represent a large portion of Arizona, and it almost felt as if it really didn't matter. And
wow.
Then, yeah, it was really humbling, as I mentioned, and I think it was humbling on different levels. For myself, when I serve the people in my legislative district, I try to really go out of my way to meet with people, even with people that may have different views, to try and make a connection. Because I do believe that constituents in particular, their voices have to be heard and certainly elevated in such a way, more so than those of lobbyists. In fact, I tell my staff that if a constituent wants to meet with me, that they override any special interest. And I think that's just the value that I have. We were, and they did escort us into a conference room where we did speak with a young woman named Hannah. And during that meeting, it was also telling. It was evident that the stories that were being shared were insignificant. It was almost as if she was just there to be a presence, but not to authentically listen or even be empathetic. And I don't think she even took notes of our conversation. And so when we walked away, later on we came back. This time there was several people with us who were interested in speaking to the senator. And again, office staff was very dismissive of our presence. This time they knew who I was, and again, incredibly dismissive. And it just highlighted for me the conversation that we've been hearing around privilege, people who have access to anything and everything because their parents are well-connected or because they have some level of privilege that others may not have. And so they carry it with them. And it was pretty evident that in this space, I felt like I was surrounded by very privileged young people. And not to be dismissive or disregard the work that they do, I'm sure they're passionate about it, but I don't think they even acknowledge or recognize how their behavior towards others is, because I don't think they've had to or they've never been called upon their behavior. And we were really insistent, and so then out came the office manager, and again, completely dismissive, unempathetic, trying to just kind of blow us off, telling us that there was a process, and it was so convenient because they always highlight their process. You have to do this as a process. You have to go through our scheduler. You have to. And I have to tell you that on Saturday morning, the first thing I did was actually sent an email as they requested us to do. And to this day, I still have not received a response from Senator Flake's office. Just to give you an example of how I, as an elected official, if I, as an elected official, am ignored.
That's really terrible. And I'm wondering if there may also be a racial element here. I mean, was your group that you described, was that kind of a mixed group, or was it all Hispanic? Or why do you think they were being dismissive? Because, like you say, most elected officials do give priority to constituents because that's who they need to get elected.
You know, so, I think while it was and is a dismissal of communities of color, in this moment, as we travel to D.C., it's a dismissal and a complete disregard of who the senators represent. And very telling, right, was the tone that Lindsey Graham took during the hearing, that Kavanaugh took in the hearing himself as he was giving testimony, and making this a partisan issue. This is not a partisan issue. This is a human rights issue. It's a woman's rights issue. And the fact that we had to go and take the elevators several times and just keep going up and down on the elevators to be able to speak to our representatives, to go and walk the hallways because we couldn't get an actual meeting in their offices face-to-face with our representatives, I mean, that really speaks to the tone that our elected officials are taking right now in really not caring about what the oath that they took to truly represent their constituents and listen. For me, I think what was very powerful about the moment is that in the room, Patty, Isela, were sharing their stories with the chief of staff and in tears and sharing their stories of assault. And while it might have not worked on that staffer, the persistence of women that came from Arizona, us that came from Arizona, a group of five Latina women with Lucha, but women from across the country that were outside protesting, Ana Maria from Center for Popular Democracy that was able to actually pin him on the elevator and really call the moral question on this. And he that considers himself a moral leader, this is a moment where he needs to be a champion and step up. And women were able to pressure him enough to get him to call for an FBI investigation. And I think that that really is a testament to, despite the fact that he didn't want to meet with us and speak with us, the pressure was so in his face that he sort of came.
Right, exactly. And you're referring, of course, to the two amazing women who did run into Senator Flake, kind of tracked him down as he was going in the elevator. And that video has gone viral of, you know, it's an amazing moment because Senator Flake had just announced that he was going to vote for Kavanaugh. That's and he was on his way to the Judiciary Committee hearing to cast that vote. And on the way, he runs into two women who confront him in the elevator and really kind of force him in a respectful but very determined way to force Senator Flake to listen to them and to what they're saying. And that moment was credited with him then, as you say, you know, he goes to the Judiciary Committee and then announces, you know, yes, I'll vote for it out of this committee, but I will not vote for Kavanaugh on the floor unless there is an FBI investigation. So did you know the two women who were in that experience with Senator Flake at the elevator?
Yes, absolutely. They're amazing, powerful women.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I think you're exactly right that there was just this outpouring of women everywhere, you know, in social media and in the streets and in the Senate. I went down to the hearing when Dr. Blasey Ford testified, and there were protests at the Supreme Court. There were protests in the street outside at the Senate. There were protests inside the Senate. That this issue has really tapped. I think you're so right. It's not a partisan issue. This is a human rights issue about how mostly women are treated. And I so appreciate the work that you did and helped to create that climate that made that shift possible. So tell us more about your experience in Washington, D.C. Were you involved? I know there was civil disobedience also. Were you involved in other protests aside from, you know, you did the right thing. The most powerful thing is generally to meet with the elected official and their staff, although it sounds like in this case Senator Flake's people were just too dismissive to make you feel like it was worthwhile. But, you know, again, it all adds up. But what other activities were you engaged in Washington, D.C., around the Kavanaugh nomination?
So we were going around the hallways, trying to run into important weekend.
So on Friday when we arrived,
I really want to pivot over to Representative Blanc so that she could speak of the moment that she confronted Lindsey Graham.
Oh my God! I can't wait to hear this, Representative Blanc. What happened?
I was just going to say that. Yeah, in between our meetings with Flake's office, we happened to be, I think, in the basement. And Alex looked at me and she's like, you know, do you see who's coming? And I'm like, Lindsey Graham. And it's someone that I feel, I know it sounds odd, I've never met him, but growing up and seeing him on TV often, because he's been in that position for such a long time, I felt a level of comfort going to him and simply asking him, you know, can you help me understand your outburst on Thursday? It was very disappointing. I was very disappointed. I had never seen such an outburst as such. And he was, again, incredibly dismissive, trying to ignore and avoid. And I think he was shocked because I was walking backwards as he was walking forward. And I was keeping up pace with him. And he kept looking around, I think, looking for help. And I was in that moment, but, you know, Alejandra was there, so she can, Alex can probably explain it better because she had, I think, a bird's eye view of what was happening. It was very telling that I think he's been in position such a long time, he has stopped seeing people.
Wow. So, Alex, what was your experience in that interface with Senator Lindsey Graham?
It was a very powerful moment because he tried to dismiss us and not acknowledge that Representative Blanc was asking him a question, but Representative Blanc, being the powerhouse that she is, she starts walking in front of him, but backwards the whole time, maintaining eye contact and really asking him about his outburst and the fact that he needs to step up for women and that this is something that no elected should behave in this manner, especially toward women. And so it was really powerful to see a woman confronting someone that so flippantly and disrespectfully said that this was, that Dr. Ford's testimony and that the testimony of so many women from across the country and them coming out and them coping with the trauma, that it's a circus. He called it a circus. And Representative Blanc called him out for that. And those are the types of candid, important conversations that we need to be able to have with our representatives, but be given the space and the time to do so as constituents and as part of the fabric of America. And what these representatives are doing is that they are leaving their constituents out of their process and trying to rush through a such an important decision where this person is going to be the supreme law of the land. And it is clear from his testimonies that he is not fit to serve.
Right. And Representative Blanc, it sounds like you did a great job. I mean, as passionately as you feel about this issue, that you kept your composure and you kept your humanity and your respect of Senator Lindsey Graham. Did you feel like you ever broke through? Did he ever answer you or really even recognize you in any substantive way? Or what did you think of that interaction?
I mean, it was, again, a moment where it's evident that they stopped seeing people as and our humanness. You know what I mean? I don't know how else to express it. Very dismissive. No empathy whatsoever. In fact, I this whole weekend has been the privilege of these men is so tangible and so obvious. And every day, whether I participated in talking with Senator Lindsey Graham, on Sunday, five of us went to the Red Mass at the church, the Catholic church there. I can't remember the name of the church right now, where they're celebrating the beginning and the opening of the Supreme Court session, October 1st. And how we were treated in Mass was really also dismissive, the lack of human connectedness in a church. And then on Monday at the airport,
say more about that. Like when you were in this church, like how can there be a lack of connectedness? Was it like a celebration of Mass or special event, or what happened that made you feel like there was a lack of connectedness in church?
So we walked in, and we were planning on going to the Mass, but the night before we actually found out that it's a special Mass. They call it the Red Mass. They were expecting a lot of potentially electeds to be present because, again, it's a celebration and the blessing of good works in relationship to the Supreme Court starting its new year. October 1st, they've been celebrating this for 60 years. And so we walked in and we happened to have pins that said, you know, we believe Dr. Ford. And that put them almost on high alert, and it was most of the church, and we found our way, and we sat down, and the ushers, we had one usher that came by and was very kind in his language. However, they were so fearful, they're like, can you please not create, you know, chaos, as if we were there to create chaos, and we weren't. We were there to be present during this Mass. It just happened to be the Red Mass. we had a woman come up to us, and I happened to be taking a picture because the church is absolutely beautiful. And they're like, please put your phones away. And as she's walking away, I look over to my left, and there was a group of women who had their phones out. So then I went behind her, and I'm like, excuse me, are you just asking me to put my phone away? Because I see a whole group with their phones out.
Mm-hmm.
And then she felt compelled to have to tell them to put their phones away. But it was just so...
targeted.
It was so targeted. And this was a church where it's supposed to be the space of love and kindness. And then even afterwards, when we had an opportunity to shake our hands with the bishop, I'm Catholic. I grew up seeing bishops as the closest thing to God in reference to their connectedness to that higher power. And, you know, as I do the sign of the cross, because my mom would be very upset with me, by even saying this, that I literally was looking at these bishops and I was asking them, how can you allow this mass without acknowledging the suffering of children and women? Your voice is so important in this. And we were completely dismissed. And what I ended up seeing is their robes disappeared, their hats disappeared, and I saw a man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, powerful. And you're talking, of course, about the annual Red Mass. It's at the Cathedral of St. Matthew the Apostle in Washington, D.C., the Sunday before the Supreme Court opens. So, and of course, the Catholic Church, I'm a Catholic myself, and there's many great traditions in the Catholic Church and the social justice tradition and so forth, but really all the power is held by the men there, and that's led to some of their own problems, but that's a conversation for another day. So is there anything more you want to tell us about kind of what happened? I mean, it was amazing to me last week being part of and seeing and hear, you know, the incredible upwelling of women, and just it was like this cri de coeur, cry from the heart about we, you know, Dr. Ford is not the only one. This is like a major phenomenon that so many women experience. And I found, you know, when I went to the Senate for the hearing where Dr. Blasey Ford testified, I had a longtime friend of decades, very close friend, who disclosed for the first time that she had been, a victim of an attempted sexual assault. And she, you know, this was like many decades ago, and it's the first time she had ever told me about it. And I see that story being replayed in so many settings all across the country. It's like this trauma that women have held secretly or with just a very few circle of close friends and beloveds, that now it's kind of coming out just how incredibly widespread this trauma is. So, tell us, you know, is there anything else you want to say about the women coming together and trying to speak this truth to power, trying to get the electeds to recognize the humanity of women, trying to get them to listen to the story and understand, like, how deep this runs and how important it is to us that these stories be heard and be acknowledged, you know, however they end up voting, that we as people and our experience must be recognized, heard, and acknowledged. Alex, what was your experience with that in Washington, D.C.? Anything else you want to share?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I went to D.C. for bringing with me the women that shared their stories at Lucha as survivors. I brought with me my own mother, who was a victim of sexual assaults and abuse for many years.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. But this is a reality, right? Like, it didn't start in this conversation under Kavanaugh. It started with electing a president that had a history of assault. There was a video that was shown And for me, I think this sends a rippling wave to all women, and I think we're seeing women resisting across the country what started longer than 2016, but in 2016, we elected to normalize it. And this is women pushing back, because the fact that Arizona also sent a prosecutor, Bill Montgomery, who has a tradition of also doing heinous human rights atrocities and colluding with Arpaio, he allowed Rachel Mitchell to go to D.C. to interrogate a victim, but taking a stance of that she was already guilty and that she wasn't telling the truth, that she was lying. And that's shameful from this state for Bill Montgomery. Doug Ducey, our current governor, who also said that he supports the appointment of Kavanaugh and that he believes the administration in saying that he's the best Supreme Court option that we have. And this is a calculated effort to dismantle protections, our democracy, and doing it by trampling on women. But women are resisting. Women are fighting back. As we speak today, there is an action at Senator Flake's office to make sure that we're not letting this discourse fall by the wayside. We are going to continue to demand that our rights as women are heard loud and clear. We're going to fight for it at a national and at a local level.
Very good. Thank you for that. And Representative Blanc, is there anything else you want to share about your experience in walking the halls of power and the streets of Washington, D.C. last week?
It was incredibly humbling, an important reminder, regardless of who we are. You know, I got elected in 2016, and that does not matter. It does not matter that I represent over 220,000 Arizonans in my legislative district. Because in those moments, I feel that I was seen as who I am outwardly, physically. I'm 5 feet on a good day, proud to be of Mexican heritage, Latina. And when oftentimes we walk into the doors, that's the first thing people see is the hue of our skin. And I was reminded of that more than once this weekend. I have never felt the level of privilege and disrespect like I did this weekend. It was really telling of how much power these men have had for such a long time. And it's almost like they see it slipping, and so they're becoming more desperate to hold on to it and maintain it in such a way that they can no longer see themselves as even being connected to others.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, you're describing exactly that experience of kind of you and your group being in Senator Flake's office and elsewhere, Senator Lindsey Graham. But one thing I have noticed, I really was so moved, really, that there's such a broad outpouring among the women that it, you know, it's, and like you say, it's not a partisan thing. These were not just Democratic women. These were Republican women, independents, or apolitical. It was just about women calling out for dignity and respect and to be heard. And that it was, you know, young, middle age, and old. It was people from all walks of life. It, you know, this issue of the sexual assault just, it knows no color. It knows no boundaries. It knows no age. Any woman from any class or any background could be subject to sexual assault. And, you know, it's all coming out. I was just reading in big op-ed in today's Washington Post by Connie Chung, who said she was assaulted 50 years ago by her family doctor. and she never told anyone except her husband once they were married. But she, you know, she's like out there with an op-ed going, you know, this can happen to any of us, and it has happened to millions of us. So I was really happy to see women coming together and supporting each other for the respect of being heard and listened to. So what was your experience with the other women that were in D.C. for these protests? And Alex, I'll start with you.
They were so powerful. I remember the story of one young woman, and she was speaking about not one experience of sexual assault, rape, but three separate times that it happened to her on separate occasions. And the fact that she could stand and share that story, but the fact that so many other women can relate to that story, I mean, this is a wake-up call for our country that we need to demand equal rights for women, but that we also need to, the fact that this country has been after women's issues for so long with Roe v. Wade and now this appointment of a sexual predator, I think all of this is really pulling out what has been in the shadows for far too long, right? Conversations about, for me, it was an awakening that I didn't even realize that I had been a victim of assault, because we think of assault as this stranger that pops out in the night and attacks us, when it's also the people that are closest to us that we trust. And sometimes when they say they're sorry, oh, it wasn't assault, right? Let me bury that. Let me put it away. And to hear this from other women, it really gave me, I mean, it was really heavy, and it was something that I'm currently dealing with now, right, of like identifying as also an assault survivor. But I feel in solidarity with so many women because I understand all of their experiences. And the fact that we're standing together and banding together to put an end to the machismo, to the patriarchy, that to me brings me a lot of hope, even though in this very moment we're reliving trauma and unearthing stories that we had kept hidden for so long.
All right, beautifully said. And Representative Blanc, what was your experience of standing with and banding with the women in Washington?
So I think for me, it was first leaving my home. I have a 20-year-old daughter, and it hit me, this realization that I was 19 when Anita Hill was going through the similar process. And here we are, 20-some-odd years later, 27 almost. That is just telling how I don't even have the right words. It feels like we have stopped moving forward and are taking these huge steps backwards. But what was really powerful for me is, you mentioned it earlier, the diversity of women and men from different backgrounds. There is this outpouring of support, and it's women that are going to authentically, I think for the first time in my lifetime, that are going to be the change that is absolutely necessary in shifting the politics. And it feels like every day, you know, we hear something and it sounds like Kavanaugh is definitely going to go and represent us in the Supreme Court. But I think it is a moment where we as women are really coming together and finding our strength and our power. And I watched it as I watched survivors shed tears of their experiences. But the fact that they're able to share that experience out loud, it's almost like they're releasing the chains of their pain.
Oh, beautiful.
Because they're sharing it with others that have had the same similar experiences. So there's no shame in saying I was in fact a victim of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first step for healing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was another little girl also. Her name was Miracle. And to see little girls in the atrium of the Senate halls that had to stand there, you know, intergenerationally with older women and be there fighting for their future, because we dismiss women so much in this country. I mean, it was really powerful to see that little girl, because she had so much power and she was going around and writing like Me Too and Resist on people's hands. But I definitely want a future where I know that my nieces, I have a great grandniece, and she's a baby, she's a year old, and I don't want her to have to go through what I hear every woman that I know, a friend, a close acquaintance, they have all come out and said that they are also survivors.
Right. Yeah, it's just so widespread. And I'm in touch with a lot of women. I've actually led a lot of women's circles. I have a lot of great women friends. And I am amazed at just how deep and widespread this sexual assault problem is. I knew it was there. I knew it was pervasive on campuses. But I just really, it's taken my breath away just how broad and deep this trauma is. And so, well, we need to make changes. And as you say, you know, the women are leading the change that's necessary. And part of that is going to be replacing the elected officials who are not listening, replace the officials who are dismissing the women. And it's not just by gender, because there are some women electeds who are not listening either.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some men electeds, particularly I was very touched by the Democratic men on the Judiciary Committee and the sensitivity of their comments and their concern. I was like, wow, you know, these guys get it. So we need to have women and men in office who get it, who are sensitive, who will stand up for women's rights. And I know, Representative Black, you're the first formerly undocumented woman to be elected to the Arizona State Legislature. So I want to talk about this 2016 election. I want to talk with you about your race. And then, Alex, I want to talk about you as being the field manager for the Adios Arpaio campaign. But not everything that happened in 2016 was terrible. I mean, obviously, the worst was Trump ended up in the White House by hook or by crook and with help from the Russians. But you were one of the bright lights in 2016, Representative Blanc. So tell us, you know, what motivated you to run for office?
You know, I'm going to be honest. I was asked to run for office by my seatmates at that time, Representative Salmon and Senator Mendez. It took me close to a month to decide, because so often as a woman, you know, we have this belief that we lack the ability, the knowledge, the capacity to serve in such a position, because somehow we should know everything before we even consider running.
Mm-hmm.
But after some time, I decided to do so. And it gives me hope, right? Because when you look at Arizona, and when Donald Trump was elected in 2016, if you were to ask any of us, we would have told you it's going to happen. Right, because we have seen attacks of communities of color here in the state of Arizona with anti-immigration laws, with Sheriff Joe separating families. You know, the separation of families started way before 2014, 2016, 2018. It was alive here in the state of Arizona. English-only laws, the separation of English language learners in different classrooms, segregation. But, you know, the banning of Mexican American studies in 2010, along with SB 1070, which is a papers, please law. And on the night that the man who came out saying that Mexicans like myself came to the United States because we are rapists. He had the audacity to call us rapists and criminals. On the same night that that man who referenced me as potentially a rapist and a criminal got elected in a state like Arizona, that gives me hope that if we continue to do and the work that Lucha has been doing for close to a decade, it feels like, because they were created, they're a grassroots organization that saw this need to actually start getting out the vote, registering voters, informing and educating about the importance of knowing and understanding your local politics, especially at the state level. They have done so much work. In fact, I am so proud to be with them because this legislative session, where before, a few years ago, they were outside protesting all these anti-immigration laws, protesting SB 1070, now they're welcome to come into the doors and help potentially with legislation that speaks to the power of the work that's going to continue to grow and improve our communities. It's organizations like Lucha that increase minimum wage for not just, you know, people of color, but all people in Arizona, living across the state of Arizona, in rural Arizona, in metropolitan Phoenix and Tucson. So my point is that it takes a lot of work, but once people are driven in a positive way and start to understand the importance of their vote, they're starting to vote. And I'm seeing it, as I'm sure Lucha is seeing it. I am seeing young people who are motivated and who understand that they can no longer sit back and just watch things happen, that they have to start becoming and are becoming more engaged. It's really powerful.
That's fantastic. That's so great. Well, I'm so glad you did decide to run. And you've got a big area there in the Arizona State Legislature. Does your district include Phoenix?
So it includes a small part of Phoenix where I grew up, but it primarily is Tempe, where Arizona State University is, and East Mesa, and then the Salt River Pima Indian community. It's close to 230,000 constituents.
Wow. Fantastic. Good for you. And congratulations on deciding to run, and congratulations on winning.
Thank you.
Now, Alex, during the same year when Representative Blanc was running, you were the field manager for the Adios Arpaio campaign. And for our listeners who may not know, Sheriff Joe Arpaio is like, well, why don't you describe who he was and what you did to get him out of office?
Yeah, thank you so much, Representative Blanc. I think you're spot on. Is we are delivering the change, and the only way that we're going to do that is if we get involved. And so community organizing at its root has been the vehicle for that change and bringing people that have not been traditionally engaged in politics into the process. And so in 2012, I actually served as a campaign manager for the Adios Arpaio campaign, where due to the voter suppression that happened and 180,000 provisional ballots were thrown out, and Arpaio, that election in 2012, won by a 80,000 vote margin, we lost that election. But in 2016, because we didn't stop organizing and we knew that we could have a victory someday and that the victory was ripped from us in 2012 due to partisan politics and voter suppression, we were able to deliver that win in 2016 through the Basta Arpaio campaign that I was part of the board, formed part of the board. And it really speaks to just continuing to do the good work in engaging young people. And we're seeing so many young people and women that were not engaged before actually now not only deciding to get involved and register voters, but they're actually running for office. This is the first time in Arizona's history, and I'm sure that this is happening across the country, where we are seeing every single district have somebody that jumped into the race, and no longer where it's the incumbent that runs unopposed. And largely the people that are jumping into those races are women, because women are seeing what's happening, and we're deciding to take matters into our hands. Women delivered the delay with Flake, and women are going to deliver the no with Flake again. And that is a testament to organizing and that continued work of building. We're only going to change this country if we continue to have these really difficult conversations. We have to really talk about women's rights, women of color, immigrant women, and how all of these policies that these out-of-touch men or legislators, in even including women, that are not values aligned, have been for years now moving, that have nothing to do with making real positive transformative impact on our communities, but rather trying to just maintain the power grab. And what we're saying in this election cycle is that we're putting an end to that.
Right, exactly. And you did a phenomenal job registering over 30,000 Latinos to vote. And how do you get people to go from not interested in politics, not registered, not voting? What do you do? Is it one-on-one conversations? And what's the message you're bringing that inspired over 30,000 Latinos to register and vote?
Yeah, so actually in 2016, so in 2012 we were able to register 34,000. In 2016 we delivered 154,000. And this year we're hoping to break, as a coalition, 200,000 new registrants, new American majority, and largely Latino.
And
it's really powerful work. It's a large statewide coalition, and we're all community of color organizations that are out there making sure that our communities are being engaged and not left out of the process. But really what we do is what you see women doing currently is speaking out, sharing their stories, and making a human connection as to why their vote matters, why each person's vote matters, and demystifying the political process. I think the challenge that we also face is that politics seems to be outside of us when we're not making the connection is that politics is impacting our day-to-day lives. These low wages, stagnated economies, tuition increases, the revoking of Roe v. Wade, all of that is because bad policies and bad elected officials are making these horrible judgment calls. And it's within our power, one vote away, one office visit to your representative away, one phone call away, from being able to make an impact and actually change that discourse.
Right. Fantastic. Well, that's amazing, and hats off to you. I mean, I love to see young people, women, you know, really anybody, and it's not necessarily those who agree with me politically. I just love to see people getting involved in the political process because, you know, the more we're engaged, then the more the people who are in elected office are going to more truly represent we the people and not just those, the privileged and the wealthy. So, thank you for doing that great work. And then, Representative Blanc, you know, when you were doing your race, you had to have motivated more people who hadn't run or hadn't registered or voted before. What was your experience in bringing new people into the process? How did you do that exactly?
So we had a primary. There were four Democrats running for one open seat in the House of Representatives in my district. So it was I personally knocked on over 5,000 doors. But what's really powerful is I grew up in the community I currently represent. I can tell you that when you knock on a door and it's someone who, like me, became a U.S. citizen because of Reagan amnesty, and they had never voted in their life. And I remember one story in particular. I was in Mesa, and oftentimes you knock on a door, you make a connection, and my connection would be, I'm running because I'm tired of the state coming after immigrants and people that look like us, and just trying to connect. I used to be undocumented, and I want to represent you. I grew up in this community. But it was you know, you leave hoping, okay, I hope I got across. I hope, you know, they're going to get their ballot and they're going to vote. I remember going back to this woman's house. It was a Saturday evening. It was 6:45. I'd been knocking on doors 8 hours already that day. And I knocked on the door and she opened, and in Spanish she said, Isela, I already voted and I voted for you. Mm-hmm. I was overwhelmed by the emotion, and I started crying. Mm-hmm. And then she starts to cry and she's like, we believe in you. And then her husband happens to walk by and he was like, you're going to fight for our community. We believe you're going to do that. And that was the response of the many people. In fact, during the primary this year in August, I got a phone call from one of the voters that actually lives in the part of Phoenix where I grew up. He called me and he's like, in Spanish, Isela, I have my ballot. I need your help. Can you please come over and help me? Went straight to his house, helped him and his daughter and his son vote on the ballot. And another time I was walking again, I think in August, and oftentimes you remember the doors that you hit and the conversations that you have. And I remember in particular knocking on this woman's door, and she was at least 74 years of age. She had never voted before, and she wasn't home, but I left her this personal message like, en español, si se puede, lo estamos haciendo. Yes, we can. We're doing it. And then I was finishing that block when suddenly I saw her come out of her house and she's yelling at me, Isela, Isela, I knew it was you.
Yep. And we're going to have to leave it there. That's all the time we have. Representative Block and Alex Gomez, thank you so much for your great work and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.